You're listening to Season 2, Episode 17 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
What's up, Storyteller Tribe? Before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Vermont College of Fine Arts for sponsoring today's episode. They're the first low-residency MFA program in the country to focus exclusively on writing for young readers. At the end of the show, you'll find out why they're ranked one of the best low-residency writing programs in the country. In today's episode, we have Evelyn Skye discussing the writing process of her debut novel, The Crown's Game. Teen Vogue says it's one of the 13 best young adult novels coming out in 2016. And Barnes & Noble says it's the most anticipated young adult fantasy novels of this year. We dive deep into the difficult decision Evelyn had to make, choosing between staying at her financially secure job where she excelled or taking a chance on fulfilling her desire of wanting her life to be something bigger. Evelyn shares the resources she used to become a self-taught author and how being a part of a writing community can significantly help improve your writing. We chat a bunch about literary agents, query letters, and marketing for authors. So if you're working on your own novel right now, you'll really benefit from Evelyn's episode. Without further ado, let's jump right in. Hey guys, we have Evelyn Skye with us today. Evelyn, what's up? How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you for having me.
Oh my goodness, of course. I'm so excited to talk to you and to share your story with the listeners. So I read that you have a bachelor's in Russian literature and history from Stanford and a doctorate in law from Harvard Law School. Okay, how on earth did you transition to writing and how did that come about?
It's actually really interesting. So as an 18-year-old going to Stanford, just wanted to be different from everybody else. And I had read Brothers Karamazov in high school in my AP literature class and just totally fell in love with Russian literature. I think there's something about being a teenager and feeling kind of angsty and like no one understands me. And so Russian lit kind of spoke to me. So I got to Stanford. I took a Russian class thinking, well, I'll just do this and then I will, I don't know, be a dentist or something. But the chemistry class, not so interesting to me. Russian language and then eventually literature and history just really drew me in. And the faculty was amazing. So I decided to major in that. And luckily, my parents were very cool and let me do that. My grandmother was a little bit concerned. I think her act the quote was, "You will starve to death."
I love that.
And, you know, my mom, though, you know, my mom and dad just completely believed in me. They said, don't worry, let her do what she wants and Evelyn will find a way to make something of it. So I studied that for 3 years and I graduated a year early. I had a job offer from the CIA for a desk job.
Yeah, that's what I read. And I wanted to ask you about that. Like, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, it sounds way cooler than it actually is. It was a desk job translating Russian magazines and newspapers, just kind of open source media, just so that, you know, the U.S. could be on top of what was going on. Because from what I heard, they had let go too many people after the end of the Cold War and then needed more people who could actually speak and read Russian. So that was my job offer that was on the table. At that point, my mom had also said, well, why don't you take the LSAT just in case you need a backup? So I did, and I applied to law schools. You know, for me, it was like Harvard sent the acceptance letter, and it was kind of hard to turn them down. And it was, you know, it's not a bad backup to have to be able to be a Harvard grad.
Well, yes, of course.
Yeah, so I did that for 3 years, graduated with my JD, worked in big law firms for 6 years doing mergers and acquisitions and intellectual property licensing here in Silicon Valley. But it was always the literature and the writing that kind of tugged at me. And so eventually I had my daughter and I was at home with her and debating whether to continue the path of a lawyer, which I enjoyed and I was good at, or if I should pursue this little dream that was still kind of like, you know, nibbling at the edges of my consciousness. And so when she was one, I decided, you know what, I'm not going back to the law firm and I'm going to give this writing thing a try. And so I started the day after Christmas Eve, I remember in 2009, and decided to write something. And I did it. And it was, you know, looking back, it's horrible. But that's kind of how I got started.
I know that you mentioned those courses you took in college. But what about creative writing courses? Did you already know how to format and structure stories and novels? Because I feel like learning about Russian literature and history and studying a doctorate in law, they don't really tap into the creative side. I mean, that's just me assuming.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I had always thought that I was a really practical writer. I'd always been told, you're good at writing essays for your classes. And that was pretty much it. And I didn't think I was that creative other than writing some poetry when I was in elementary school and having it published in like the local county anthology. And I took no creative writing classes. So it was a big leap for me to say, I'm going to give this writing thing a shot. And the first manuscript that I wrote, this terrible time travel thing that was partially in Imperial Russia and partially in modern day United States, it was just me basically vomiting on the page. And then after that, I was really proud of myself because I wrote something that had enough pages to be a book, but I kind of realized it wasn't very good. And so I started just reading obsessively online blogs that were super helpful. There's actually a fellow Stanford grad, Nathan Bransford, who used to be a literary agent and is also a published author. And his website was one of the big things that helped me because he talks a lot about craft and how to write, but also about the industry, how to get a literary agent. So I devoured that and I bought a ton of books on craft and I just kind of went at it and I kept writing. And my second manuscript was terrible in a different way because it was everything that I had learned, right? Like, this is how you're supposed to write a book. And so it sounded kind of robotic because I was trying to put all those pieces together. But over time, you know, lots of practice and trying to implement things because I was self-taught. And that's kind of, yeah, that's how it began, really.
That's impressive. So you didn't take any writer's workshops or even try to, like, writer's retreat, nothing like that? You just literally, everything was self-taught through those books?
So I started with the books and the blogs, and then eventually I did take one class through Stanford Continuing Education, just like it was a Saturday workshop, two Saturdays, from a couple of local authors. And that was pretty cool because we kind of learned a little bit about structure and workshopping. But that was a pretty short thing. And then I joined the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, SCBWI, which is also a really great organization. And I started going to conferences. So I'd go down to the big LA conference, which is their annual conference every year. That was pretty much it. But for the most part, the craft was just about finding what I could find online and then trying to implement it, trying to practice and see if it worked, and then finding other writers, critique partners who would read and be honest and tell me what was working and what was not.
Okay, so when you mentioned these critique partners, are these the same partners that you found, for example, that 2-3-day workshop for the continuing education through Stanford, or was that from the conference?
Yeah, so these were from a conference, actually. So I met one woman who just was super nice. I mean, I felt like I was kind of a nobody. I mean, I was a nobody, and I had no idea what I was doing. But she just reached out and said, hey, we have a group here in the Bay Area, and if you'd like to join us, what we do is we meet once a month. Everyone submits, I think it was at that point, one chapter, about 10 to 15 pages ahead of time, so we can all read and give our comments. And then we'd meet in person. And there are a few people who had moved away, so then they would just be online on Skype or Google Hangouts, whatever we were doing back then. And we would go through everybody's submissions and kind of talk about, this part is really great, this part was unclear, or, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, I just met them. It just started with one person reaching out at a conference. And I have to say that I am so grateful to this community of writers because everyone has just been so generous. And I'm trying to do the same too, you know, to like kind of pay that forward.
Yeah, I know. I read that you founded a group. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think you're probably talking about YA Lunch Break.
Yes.
So what I write is young adult, so, you know, like Hunger Games, Harry Potter, that sort of thing. And so YA Lunch Break is a local Bay Area writers group / book club. It's open to anybody. It's just a Facebook group. And we meet once a month. It's kind of like a book club in that we have a book that we all read and then we discuss it. But it's not just the traditional book club where we talk about what we liked or didn't like. We actually take the book apart. Even if you don't like a book because it's not quite your style, you are still encouraged to come anyway because we talk about why did you stop reading at page 10 or why couldn't you get past page 1 or why did you get bored at page 100? And we try to unpack it from not only a reader's point of view, but also a writer's point of view.
Do you feel like that group that you formed has helped you or improved your writing as well, just to hear feedback about other writers and other authors' works?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's also really healthy, too, to understand that you might have a book that has won a ton of awards, but it's not actually for everybody. Mm. And so people will come in and, you know, readers bring their own life experiences and their own opinions to what they're reading. You know, when you put a book out there, it's not yours anymore. It becomes every reader's own experience, right? It becomes yes. theirs too. And I think one of the best things I've learned from it is that my work will resonate with some people and it won't with others. And that's okay, because that's just the way it is. Because there are plenty of us who read these amazing books in our book club and we will have passionate debates and some people will love it and some people will say, this was horrible. I couldn't stand it.
I think that's really great for listeners to hear too, because a lot of them are not always living in big cities. It's harder to have access. Either it's only online or that's it, you know? I think that's great to hear authors like you are creating these communities yourselves and leading it. And now, Evelyn, I would love to jump into The Crowns Game, the book that you wrote, if that's okay.
Yes, let's talk about The Crowns
yes,
Game.
Yes, I love dissecting the writer's process and the inspiration behind it. So why don't we start off by you sharing with us the inspiration behind the story of The Crowns Game and what made you want to write this book?
Sure. So firstly, The Crowns Game is basically, in a nutshell, it's about two enchanters fighting a duel to the death in a magical imperial Russia. It's dark, but it's also bright. You know, there's a lot of big magic in it. And so for me, it was partially wanting to bring in my past, like my absolute passion for Russian literature and history, and wanting to see a book like that, because we have in YA Leigh Bardugo's amazing series that starts with Shadow and Bone, her Grisha series.
Yes.
And that is kind of like, that was like the Russian fantasy, but it's also a Russian inspired fantasy. It's set in a fictional world called Ravka, which is absolutely amazing. But for me, as someone with an actual degree in Russian literature and history, I wanted to bring in the real Russian aspect too, and kind of introduce people to this place and this culture that I really loved. That was one big thing. The second thing is that, like I said in the beginning, I had been writing for a while and trying to figure these things out on my own. I have actually written 8 other manuscripts that were never published.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I don't want people to think that this was an overnight success story. It's kind of like in Hollywood when people say like, oh, wow, this actress came out of nowhere. But then you actually realize that she's been working for years and years in these smaller roles. And it's kind of a similar thing. Like I had a different agent for 3 years, and we tried to sell 3 different books and they didn't sell. And I was on the brink of quitting, and I thought, you know, maybe there's something about me. I'm not doing this right. I don't have that certain spark. So I was about to quit. And then this crazy idea came to me, because I had been writing contemporary social justice issues for a while. I started out writing fantasy. Then I decided I wasn't actually good at world building. And so I started writing contemporary social justice things that were more related to what I had done, studied in law school and done as a lawyer. And those books were not selling. So I said to my friends, look, I'm going to quit. They said, don't quit. And I said, well, I don't really care what you say, but okay, I have a stupid, crazy idea. It's about these Russian magicians, and they're going to fight each other, and they're basically one has to die, and haha, I'm going to write fantasy, and I suck at fantasy. The 3 of my best friends all gave me different but the similar reactions, which was, yes, oh my gosh, this is what you need to write. One of them said, you love reading books like this, and I was wondering when you were going to come around and realize that this is what you should be writing. And so I said, okay, fine, I will do this. This will be my last ditch effort. I decided I was going to leave my agent at the time. He was absolutely wonderful. He is a veteran in the industry, but he specialized in contemporary, more gritty kind of, you know, modern day books. So I thought, okay, I will leave him. I'm going to try to get a new agent with this crazy idea manuscript. If it doesn't work, then I will, I don't know, go back to being a lawyer. That was my backup, right? Or I will do something else. I wrote it and I got an agent super quickly. And then we sold the book super quickly. It was a 6-figure deal.
What?
Everything finally worked
out. Fell into place.
Yeah, it fell into place. And it was about the right time. It was about putting in all those years of effort and practicing through all those manuscripts. And it turned out it wasn't that I couldn't write fantasy. It's just that when I started as a writer, that was a skill I didn't have, but I had built it up over 8 different books that I tried to write. This is the story that I want other people to know, is that it takes time and effort. And if you have a dream and you keep pursuing it, it will happen, because it happened to me. So I know that that's real.
I love that. And when you were saying that this book, it took 8 manuscripts, how long was that whole process?
So that was over 5 years that I wrote 8 manuscripts, because I tend to write really fast, tend to abandon things if I know they're not going to work. So I have, you know, several of them are just first drafts. There's enough material to be a book, but I decided, okay, you know what, this one is not actually a project that's worth revising. So then I would move on to the next idea, because I kind of also was very aware that I was practicing. And so I was only going to spend my limited time on things that I knew were worthwhile. So that's, yeah, that's kind of how that process worked. But then the Crowns game, part of the reason I knew that this book had something to it was I wrote that first draft in 36 days.
What?
Yeah, it was insane. I mean, I'm a fast writer, but that is...
That's crazy. That's just like, oh my God, stop.
Right? I mean, it was just magic. And I think it was, like I said, the right time, the right book. It just, everything just fell together.
How many drafts did you go through for the Crowns game?
Oh gosh, I think I've lost count now. So I finished that first draft in July. And then I revised it over the summer, over a couple months. So I think I probably did a couple more drafts over the summer, like exchanging things with critique partners, getting their feedback. And then I had to start looking for an agent because I had left my other agent. So I had to query agents. So that is sending in a cover letter and a short, like a 5-page sample of your writing and a summary of what the story is about. So I queried in, I want to say September, I think. At the very end of September, or maybe it was the beginning of October, I started getting offers for representation because people had by then had time to read it. And so I had several offers, but my current agent at Writer's House, Brianne Johnson, she's just amazing. Like, she fell in love with the characters and she understood the characters and she understood the story and what I wanted it to be. You know, this is the other thing about when you're looking for an agent or someone to work with as your partner for your career, you want someone who understands your vision and who understands you. And so some people wanted my story to be something that it wasn't. They wanted it to be more like The Hunger Games, you know, maybe because it has the word game in it, or there's two people fighting to the death, so they wanted it more violent. There is that dark element in the story, but that isn't all that it is. And she understood that. And so I just knew from the beginning that she was going to be the agent for me. So I signed with her really quickly, and she and I did a couple rounds of revision that were pretty light revisions. It wasn't like taking the whole thing and rewriting it. And then we sent it out Thanksgiving weekend to editors in all the major publishing houses.
For example, listeners who are beginner storytellers, how would you advise them on finding that person and knowing that they would stick true to your vision? Do you do research before sending the query letters to them, or do you just kind of like send out all these different query letters, then whoever's interested, then you kind of like interview them?
I think it's a mixture of both, actually. It's a little bit tricky. So you should definitely do your research ahead of time. So part of the reason I think that my querying process this time around went so quickly was that I had been very careful to look and see who loved fantasy with historical element to it. And so I actually only sent out queries to 13 agents this time. And I think I got full manuscript requests from 12 of them.
Holy moly, congratulations.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Thank you. But it was, you know, it was experience because I had had an agent before. And so then when you get the offers, yeah, you interview them and you try to figure it out, because there's only so much you can learn from doing research online, right? Like there will be interviews online. You can Google every single agent, right?
Yes.
If you're in the young adult or the middle grade field, there's a great site called Literary Rambles. That was one of my go-to resources, where they have interviews of agents, and they've collated every internet. They've done an internet search for all these agents too. So like all the information's right there. I don't know if there's anything similar. I'm sure there are for other genres, but part of it's also interviewing, but part of it is just like something that I can't really teach people, because I had to go through having a different agent to be able to figure out what worked for me and what didn't, because it's so personal.
Okay, got it. For the queries itself, I'm assuming that you found books on querying and then kind of followed that format?
Yeah, absolutely. It was all basically blogs, like the blog I mentioned earlier. There are online forums. And like you were talking about, you know, not everyone lives in a major city. But the great thing is, when you're at the stage of querying, there's so many resources just online. So I was a member of these forums where, from like the very, very early manuscripts I wrote, I would post query letters and people would critique them and help you mark them up and help make them better. And then you kind of do the same, you pay the favor back, right? So you do the same for them. And that's really where I kind of honed that craft on how to write this cover letter.
Ooh, that's awesome. That's really, really helpful for listeners as well. So thank you for sharing that. And now, Evelyn, I want to jump back into the Crowns game. I'm seriously loving, and I think it's so awesome that you are able to use your degree in Russian literature and history with your book. What about characters? How did you develop the characters? Were they inspired by you, yourself, your best friends?
Yeah, so the characters are interesting. So there's two enchanters, Vika and Nikolai. And I think that with any character, at least the ones that I write, there's always a little part of me inside all of them because, you know, I'm the author, right? And like, that's like my closest experience. And I've had other interviews ask me like, who's your favorite character or who was the easiest or the hardest to write? And I don't think I have a favorite, but like Nikolai, he is an orphan from the Kazakh steppe. He's been brought to St. Petersburg. He's been groomed so that he's very, very polished. And yet he never really feels like he fits in because this wasn't really his world. And he is still kind of a nobody, even though he's got fancy clothes and he knows how to play cards and go on hunting trips. And he's an enchanter, but still he feels like an outsider. And that's kind of been my experience a lot of my life. I grew up with everyone having their best friends and me always feeling like, well, I want a best friend for life. But, you know, I never really got that. And so there's a lot of me in Nikolai. I did give him a best friend for life because, you know, I didn't have one, so he should have one.
Aww.
But so there's a lot of me in him, and yet he's still very different, right? I feel like I start with a like seed of a character, whether it's something from me or something from one of my friends or just somebody random that I know. And then as the story develops, as I write it, these characters just kind of grow. For example, Vika, the other enchanter, she is really nothing like me. She's wild and she completely disregards rules. And I am such a rule follower. But she was based on someone that I saw once at a writing conference, and I don't even know this person's name, but this person just had this like bright fire about her. And so I took that like one small like glimpse of this person that I don't know. And then from there, I built Vika out of her.
Wow. Okay. With creating your characters, do you find it difficult writing from like a male's point of view?
That's a really interesting question.
Or did it come naturally?
I don't really think about it. But I have been pondering this lately, you know, because I was recently at Y'all West, a book festival in LA, and people were talking about writing love stories, and they were talking about contemporary love stories. It's great to write from multiple points of view, and you have the boy's perspective, but I started wondering if that was an accurate portrayal of what boys think, or if it's just the women writers writing what they think or wish that boys would think. I don't really know the answer to that. I think part of it too, though, is that every single person is so unique that in a way it doesn't matter, right? Because there's no such thing as just one male prototype and then I get it wrong. It's just like, okay, well, I'm writing Nikolai, I'm writing Pasha, and these are the kinds of things that he thinks about. So I don't know, I just like go with the character and I don't really think about what their gender identity is. It's just kind of them and it's their personality and whatever works for them kind of shows through.
How are you able to weave everything together in an organized way? Was there a moment throughout your writing process where it felt a little bit disorganized and you felt like, oh my gosh, where am I going with this plot right now? Or
yeah.
Or were you like pretty good? Because, you know, some writers, they outline, they have or index cards. Was there something that helped you keep yourself in track and so that your mind doesn't digress?
I bow down to people who can outline, the people with the index cards that are color coded. They are amazing. And they talk about what they do and I get tired just listening to them, but I'm very, very impressed by them. It's not because I don't think that what they do is great. I think it's amazing and I wish I could do that. I am what they call a pantser, which means I just kind of figure things out as I go. And so I do have problems with getting completely off track. I have a few plot points that I sort of know what's going to happen. Like I know within the first 40 pages or something big is going to happen. And then I know that close to the end of the book, something big will happen. And then sometimes I sort of know how it's going to end. A lot of times I don't know how it's going to end, though. I just kind of write towards it. And then I get there. I'm like, oh, well then, that's kind of cool. Along those lines, I'm working on the sequel to The Crowns Game right now. This is exactly what happened to me. I wrote an entire book and I sent it in and my editor was so lovely and she tried to work with it. But what I kind of figured out when I read her edit letter was that I had just written a completely wrong book. The only things I'd gotten right were Nikolai and Vika's names. Yeah, I just.
So what do you do in that situation?
I tossed it and I started.
Oh my. What?
Yeah, tossed the whole thing. There is a secret, completely different book that exists on my hard drive that probably no one will ever see. And I wrote an entire new book.
That should be a special edition, as an aside. Sounds like that's how your practice of the 8 manuscripts came in handy, where you knew when to let go. And that's such a big thing. So a lot of writers, myself included, would be so attached to our own writings, where it's almost like our I can't let it go kind of situation. But my gosh, I admire you that you're able to just dust it off and just keep going.
Yeah, I mean, like, I might have, like, you know, curled up in a ball and was on the carpet for a few days. maybe not. We can pretend that I just kind of said, no big deal. But I think it is kind of important to be able to let go. And, you know, to be a little bit nerdy here, there's kind of this economic theory of sunk cost, right? Like, you've already put in all the effort. You've already, you know, paid for this, basically, this book or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And then you have to ask yourself, well, if that time has already been spent, is it actually good for me to keep working on this thing that clearly is the wrong thing, or that is probably pretty surely the wrong thing, and sink more effort into it? Or should you move on because you're going to expend, you have X amount of new energy to spend, but you've already spent that other energy. That's done, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely a kill your darlings situation. Sometimes it's worth it.
Oh my God. I really, really admire you for that. That is so badass. After you toss this out, did the editor kind of at least give you a direction? So it's almost like a hint where you want to go.
Yeah, no, she actually didn't tell me to try again from a blank slate. She was amazing, and she was trying to pick out the pieces that worked and how we could continue with what I had written. I looked at it, and I realized that it was just going to be so much work anyway. I would basically be rewriting the majority of the book with just these little minor signposts here and there that worked, that it was actually going to be easier to start from a brand new document. So then she and I got on the phone. We kind of talked. I told her what my plan was. And we kind of sort of hashed out a very vague outline of how it would start, but not really knowing how the details were going to play out. And so she let me go and do my own thing again. And I turned in another book. It was better. Still kind of crazy. It was slightly better. Her overarching comment about the first draft, the first version of the sequel, was that it was a great fantasy book, but it was a different kind of book. And that I needed to remember what the first book was about and the feeling, the ambiance of that first book.
Oh, which the tone.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so she said the second book needs to have that same kind of feel. At the time, once I got that edit letter on the sequel, we also got back the first pass pages for The Crowns Game. Mm-hmm. And that is after it's been copy edited. Most everything should be clean now. There are no typos, and they've typeset it. It's the first time you see it on a page, sort of what it's going to look like in a book. It's not just a Word document. And then you have to go through it and edit that and make sure that there aren't any orphaned words, you know, funny words that got hyphenated that aren't supposed to be hyphenated, that should really all be online, that sort of thing. So I, right after I got the comments on that first wrong version of the sequel, I reread The Crowns Game because of the first pass pages. And I thought, oh my gosh, she's right. I mean, she's absolutely brilliant. The book I had written was really a different kind of book. And so that's kind of what I took with me when I wrote this next version of the sequel. And then when I turned it in, you know, it was a lot better in tone. The plot was still completely crazy. And then at that point, we were getting closer to our deadlines. And so we started a process where I would revise chunks of the book. So I did the first 25% of the book, and I sent it in for her, and I stopped working, which is a really hard thing for me to do, to not keep on revising. There was really no point in me working and going on another wrong tangent if she came back and said, no, this first quarter is wrong. So we did that for a while. Finally, yeah, after I think three rounds, got to a point where she said, yeah, everything is really clicking now. This is absolutely the right direction. Super excited. Now go and finish the rest of the book based on this first quarter.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's kind of how we did. So it became more collaborative at that stage.
Editors are mentors, basically. So happy for you, by the way, to hear that it's doing so well. What a great partnership, because in the end, it really is a team effort.
Absolutely.
Do you have a specific process in how you write that helps you the best?
Yeah, I'm a very visual person. Like, I actually have to see the words. And so I write on a computer. And I think it's also a generational thing. Like, I grew up with computers. I can only think with a computer. Like, I can't think while writing longhand. I know some authors, they write entire drafts in a notebook, and I can't do that. And when I am out and about, if I am in the middle of grocery shopping, for example, and I get an idea, I have just a little note app on my phone. And so then I will stop what I'm doing and I'll just kind of jot down what I was thinking. Sometimes it's just a sentence that I think, oh my God, I need to add this sentence. And I'll kind of be pushing my cart through the grocery store, probably sort of running over small children, revising this sentence in my head. And then as soon as I feel like I've got it, then I will, you know, pull out that app and I'll write it down. And then when I get home, I'll put it where it needs to go in the document.
What was the most frustrating thing about writing The Crown's Game?
You know, it's really interesting because earlier we were talking about weaving things in and making sure that they make sense. And for me, one of the most frustrating things, it was fun but frustrating, was the world building and making sure that the rules of magic were airtight, that everything made sense, that the characters were doing things for a reason and not just some arbitrary thing because the author wanted to create more tension here, so we threw in some random challenge. Like, everything had to make sense from the beginning. And I think that a challenge that a lot of writers face is that they compare their drafts, especially early drafts, with finished books. And that makes it incredibly daunting to look at something else and say, oh my God, that thing is perfect. And why does my draft not make sense? And I do the same thing. You know, I compare my messy drafts of this sequel to the finished Crown's Game. And I think, oh God, the sequel is going to tank. It makes no sense whatsoever. The truth is that for The Crown's Game, we went through every single time we did a revision, we were tightening up those rules of magic. And my editor was saying, okay, this is better, but it's still not airtight. Like, what about this? And she asks tons of questions. And every time you answer one question, it's like five more are born. And I was, at that point, I was like, I am never writing fantasy again. This is ridiculous. But it's also fun, right? Because then she asks me these questions and then I get to figure out, well, why is it like this? I don't know. And I don't always have to have the answers. And I can just write something and say, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, yes, this is what it was like. And when a reader picks up a book and they see this finished product, it seems like that was there all along. But really, it took revision and revision and revision and going back to page 2 and sticking this in and going back to page 74 and sticking this in here. And that's how you kind of layer it in. Frustrating, fun, but in the end, worth it.
I don't know how you're able to keep track of that. You didn't even have a cheat sheet for the magic that you're writing about, did you?
No, I just kind of came up. It's like I knew in this book that each of the enchanters would have 5 turns. And so, although that actually came about in later drafts, like at first it was like they were going to take turns, but I didn't know how many that they were going to have. We ended up settling on 5 turns to give it more structure. Some points it was kind of like, okay, so it is now Vika's turn. What should she do? And I would just kind of sit there and stare at the page and just start writing something. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. And you just got to scrap the ones that don't work and then try again.
So right now it sounds like you're writing full time.
Wow,
that's amazing. And you're also a mom, right?
I am a mom, yeah. So I like to say that I have 2 full-time jobs.
Knowing that you're a full-time writer and a mom too, how's your week looking like usually when you're working on a book?
It kind of depends on which stage I'm at. When I'm first drafting, that's when I'm a total crazy person. You don't write a book in 36 days without basically ignoring everything else. So thank you so much to things like Google Shopping Express and Instacart and Amazon Prime. Otherwise, there would be nothing in the house. My daughter, luckily, you know, I've been writing for almost her entire life. I started when she was 1. And so she knows this about me. She knows that if I space out over breakfast, sometimes she'll be like, hello. And sometimes she'll just let me alone. And she'll afterwards say, you were making a funny face. Were you thinking about your book again? And I was like, yeah, I was. I didn't realize I was making faces. But apparently I do that because I start writing dialogue in my head and I start acting out the characters. So that's kind of like me being a total crazy when I'm first drafting. And sometimes I get like that if I'm in a very, very intense deadline situation for revision. You know, I'm doing book promotion right now on top of deadlines for my sequel. So it's been a little bit crazy. So at one point, my boyfriend said, I really would like to see you sometime. And I said, I have no time. You can see me if you bring me food.
So bye, Felicia.
Yeah, he showed up with food and I was like, hi, nice to see you. You know, and he's just like, you have to eat, okay? So that's when I'm crazy. But on a regular, more like day-to-day schedule, I generally in the morning, get my daughter ready for school, take her to school. And then the first couple hours of the morning are dedicated to catching up on email and social media. I'm very active on Twitter, Instagram, you know, just kind of catching up on that kind of stuff, running errands, working out, you know, that's really important to me. I think it's important to stay healthy. And I do tend to get a lot of ideas while I'm running on the elliptical or, you know, doing Pilates or something like that. I'm also kind of, I'm really big into dance. I'm a terrible dancer, but it just, it's important to live your life too, right? Like you can't just live in this fictional world because otherwise you have nothing to bring to it. So those are like my mornings, and then I kind of get myself together and have a super early lunch. And then after lunch, which is like literally, I mean, like it's like I'm looking at the clock at 10:59, and if it hits 11, I'm like, yes, it is a reasonable time for a person to have lunch. So I eat like at 11, and then that means I'm done at like 11:07. And that's when I start writing. Then I have a few hours to write before I have to pick my daughter up from school. And then afternoons I spend with her in the evenings, and that's being mom. And then when she goes to her room in the evenings around 7 or 7:30, that's when I start writing again. And I write for another 2 or 3 hours. Yeah. And
do you have a goal, whether it's per hour each day that you write, or is it per word or per page?
Yeah, if I'm first drafting, I try to hit somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 words a day. That seems like a reasonable goal for me. I try to be kind to myself as a first draft and just tell myself I can write anything. It can be terrible. It just has to be words on a page because that's what revision is for. And then with revising, it just depends on how tight I am on deadline if I'm not on deadline. You know, if I'm working on something that my publisher hasn't bought yet, then I have all the time in the world. But if I'm working on my sequel and we've actually got to get this to copy editing by a certain date, then I will often have to set goals for myself like, okay, I have to revise 3 or 5 chapters every single day, that sort of thing.
Do you have a favorite writing program or specific writing program that you use that you can share with us?
Definitely. I am in love with Scrivener.
Oh, I love them too.
I think that people who have moved over to Scrivener, most of us are very, very, very passionate about it. Scrivener has about 10 billion features on it. I probably use 2 of them. But even that has completely changed the way that I think. I moved over to Scrivener around the time I was writing my third manuscript. And back then, before that, I was writing on Word. And the thing with Word is that, at least for me, it's just one giant document. And with Scrivener, you have every single chapter, or even every single scene, if that's the way that you work, is broken down into its own mini document. And there's a sidebar, and so you can see them. And that really helped me start thinking about scenes and chapters as their own little mini arcs. So that was huge, huge, huge in my development as a writer. And then just having those little bits and pieces there too makes it so that when my editor says, okay, the pace here gets kind of slow, we need to be able to cut about this many pages, or we need to be able to move this somewhere else. Every little scene or chapter is its own document. It's easy for me to just take that and then move it somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure if you're aware. You said you use only 2 of the features out of
the
billion.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm very similar because I'm just like, oh, if I find like 2-3 things that I really understand, I'm just so comfortable with it and I'll stick to it. But there's this other feature they have where it's a visual outlining, like index cards in their program. So just FYI, in case you ever do decide to segue and transition over to outlining, that might be something you want to check into, one of their other million features.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. My head kind of exploded as you explained it,
but right?
It sounds really, really, really amazing.
They're such an amazing team and I'm such a big fan of them. That's why whenever people do mention Scrivener, I'm just like, yes, please. Now back to your book and your writing process. I know you mentioned that you were in the process of promoting your book. What do you think about marketing for authors, and also about your take on social media overall for getting your books out there?
The first point for marketing, I feel like you have to do things that are genuine to you. Because if you're just shoving your book in people's faces, it's going to show. And so you definitely have to promote your book because this is what you've been working for, right? I mean, this is your art and this is your livelihood and it's a business. And so you need to be able to sell what you've created. And of course, you just want to share your stories too. But, you know, you have to experiment and figure out what works and doesn't work for your personality. And everyone's just very, very different. For me, like on social media, I love Twitter and I love Instagram. One of my friends just tried to give me a tutorial on Snapchat. So I'm learning that. I can see that I would like Snapchat, like once I really get into it, at least for like more important days where there's a lot going on. It'd be pretty fun to snap and create a story. But Twitter's kind of my normal place. I tried Tumblr. I'm sort of still there, but it doesn't really work for me. Same with Pinterest. I think it's just, you know, different personalities try different things. But the other thing I think that's really important about marketing and being on social media is that it can't just be promo about your book all the time. Like, you have to actually care about the people. Like I was saying before, I love the writing community so much. And so part of me giving back is that for a couple years, I was doing a contest called Pitch Wars, which is hosted by the amazing Brenda Drake, who is also an author, and really she gives back to the community so much. And Pitch Wars is a contest where aspiring authors are mentored by published and agented authors. And we choose a manuscript to work with. We help revise the entire thing with them. And at the end, there's a showcase where agents come and they look through all these manuscripts and they read them. It's kind of like getting to jump to the top of their query boxes. And so many of these writers get agents from this and end up getting their books published. It's a really great way to give back to the community. And so that matters a lot to me. And that's how I met a lot of people that I know online. To bring this all back to social media, it's not just about going out there and shoving your own book in people's faces. It's about being part of the community, being a good citizen, taking and giving at the same time. And then hopefully when your book is ready to be out there in the world, you've got real friends who care about you and, you know, you're promoting their books and they're promoting yours.
Thank you for sharing your take on marketing. I love that. And have you heard about Goodreads? It's this site where people can have their own profiles and share about their favorite books, and authors can have it. And it seems to be like something that is starting to get pretty big with marketing for authors as well.
Yeah, so my book is on Goodreads. I haven't done any promotion through Goodreads. My publisher, HarperCollins, did do a giveaway of advanced review copies a while back through Goodreads. So that was something that they ran on their own. Goodreads is amazing. I know that as authors, you can also run giveaways to them. I just don't know how that works out because I was lucky enough that Harper did that for me. You can add books on there. So readers can add books that they're interested in that aren't out yet. And then when the book is published, Goodreads will send an email to you saying, hey, you can read this now, which is super helpful. And people have been doing that with my book. So it's pretty great. Like, I was surprised recently because I checked Goodreads and found out that of the books that are coming out in May, mine was the number 5 most popular one that people have added to their like want to read list.
Congratulations. So, yeah, that's so exciting.
It's kind of crazy. You know, I think last I checked there are something like 21,000 plus people who had added my book and it's not out yet. So that means that from a marketing perspective, that's 21,000 people who are going to get an email, you know, when the book hits shelves saying, hey, you can read this now. So it's a really great tool for writers that doesn't actually take that much energy because your publisher should put your book up there for you. And you just kind of send people the link and say, hey, if you are on Goodreads, add this to your to be read list and you'll find out about it when it's out.
Wow, that is so awesome. I did not know about that feature. So thank you for sharing that. And now I'd love to touch back on your personal story. I'd love to know if there was a point in your life where you felt like you couldn't make any progress forward.
Yeah, I think that I can think of two. And one was being a lawyer and knowing that I was good at what I did, but not loving it. And realizing that that's possible, right? That you can excel at something, but have it still not be the thing that you want to do. And having to ask yourself, okay, well, should I keep doing this because I'm good at it? Or should I pursue something else that isn't, you know, let's be frank, being a writer, it's like a ring toss. Like, you don't know if you're going to actually hit anything, right? Yeah. You don't know if your book's going to sell, if it's going to sell well. And being a lawyer, it's very financially stable. I mean, it is a safe, safe job because people, especially in the United States, they're always going to need lawyers. They need people to read their contracts, right?
Yeah.
So that was a big decision for me because I was really quite unhappy with my day-to-day work. It's like I could make it sound really glamorous, like, hey, I'm working on this big merger, it's worth $1 billion, and people would say, wow, that's amazing, and I'd say, I know, gosh, I am so incredible. But really it wasn't, right? I mean, like, it wasn't me really doing anything special. And, you know, I took pride, obviously, in being a lawyer, but it didn't feel fulfilling to me. Like, I knew that it wasn't my thing. And so I had to make that decision about whether to keep on the safe track or if I wanted my life to be something bigger that I thought it might be able to be, but it was risky. So that was a big leap for me. And I was lucky that I was in a position, having saved a lot of money from being a lawyer, that I could take that risk and try my hand at writing and know that if it didn't work out, that I could go back to being a lawyer. So I think that was part of why my mom had been like, you should go to law school just in case, because it is a really good just in case. So for me, I realized that I was really lucky in that sense. Like, I had kind of prepared myself, so I had the just in case, but, you know, not everyone is in that situation, so it's not as easy to make that leap. So I really, really appreciate having that backup. That's, you know, kind of how I did it. And I didn't know if it was going to work out. And, you know, there are still those 8 horrible books, and some of them are really not so horrible, but that didn't work out. And then the second point was when I thought I was going to quit because I hadn't sold those 8 books, and I had an agent, but we hadn't been able to do anything. And he represented some of my friends, and they had sold, he had sold their books. And it really made me feel like there was something not wrong, but not right with me and with my writing. And that maybe I had gone astray. Maybe I was supposed to stay in that safe path as a lawyer. Like, maybe that's what my life was supposed to be. And thank goodness for friends who believe in you and who tell you to keep going and to write that crazy, crazy idea that you think makes no sense, but ends up being the one thing that really, really did make sense.
For listeners who may be literally on the brink of wanting to quit their full-time job because they love writing so much, it's their heart and soul and their passion, but they're really uneasy and not sure, so there's like a 50-50. Is there like an inner monologue that you can advise for them to think about to themselves that could help them make that choice that may be right for them?
I just went through this with one of my best girlfriends who's an author. She has a book out that came out earlier this year, and she wanted to quit her day job and just write. And it's hard because it's really, really difficult at home after you're exhausted from a day job and write at night. And especially if you have kids, you know, then you're dealing with them and you're just so done at the end of the day. But at the same time, you know, most books don't sell for very much money. And her agent had a long conversation with her too, which was basically, keep your day job. Like, what you need to do is take your time writing, write good books, but you really can't quit your day job unless you have several books out there, if you're getting like normal advances. But then once you have several books out there, then you're making money on the new book selling, and you also have your backlist, your previous books that are selling, and then you have a steadier income stream, and that's when you quit your day job, which is not what everyone wants to hear. It's certainly not what my friend wanted to hear. She wanted to hear that she could quit her job now. But in the book industry, there's just no guarantee that your next books are going to sell, that a publisher is going to buy them. And so if you do manage to get a bigger book deal, then yeah, then maybe you can quit your day job. But even then, you know, it's still, I don't know, it's always so scary. It's like, I don't know if my next series is going to sell, right? So
yeah.
It's kind of a risk, and as long as you have a backup plan, I guess. I don't know. That seemed like such a downer, but I feel like
No. It was actually very refreshing. It's the reality of things. You know, everyone wants to hear, oh, it's okay, quit your day job, the job that you hate or the job that you're not really enjoying, to go and do something that you really love to do. But at the end of the day, there's always bills to pay. There's food you need to put on the table, a roof over your head. And if you can't do that, then there's no way you're going to be able to write.
Absolutely. Yes.
On a lighter and positive note, please share the proudest moment in your career.
This is a great one. So my daughter is 7 years old, so she's just old enough to really kind of understand and appreciate what I'm doing, but still young enough that everything is still so new and genuine, and she's still so cute and squishy. And one of the proudest moments was when I got my ARCs, which are the advanced review copies. And for people who don't know, that's basically the unproofread, slight kind of paperback version of your book that is a marketing tool that publishers print and send out to booksellers and librarians, sometimes bloggers, to get them interested to see what they want to stock for the upcoming season. And so, you know, ARCs are printed while you and the publisher are still going through and kind of finalizing and proofreading the book. But it is the first time you see and hold something in your hands that isn't a Word or Scrivener document, and that it's in book shape. And so I got the ARCs, and it's got, you know, kind of a lower resolution quality version of the cover art, but it looks like a book. And my daughter came home from school and she basically freaked out and she started reading it right away. She's an amazing reader. And I had to say, well, don't really read it because this is not for 7-year-olds to read. but the absolute best moment besides seeing my little girl holding this book in her hands was when she turned to the dedication. And the dedication is to her. And it says, "To Reese, you are the reason I believe in magic."
Oh my God, I just got goosebumps everywhere.
Thank you. And she, bless her little tiny heart, just put the book down and she came over to me and she gave me a hug. And I thought she was just like, yay, happy, whatever. And then I could feel that tiny little heart beating super, super, super fast. Like it was pounding. Like it was like this little tiny, like fluttering thing pressed up against me. And all of a sudden I felt her like body kind of heave and she was sobbing because she understood the magnitude of that dedication and it meant so much to her. And like then we were both just crying. And that was like the best, best, best.
Girl, you're going to make me cry right now. Jeez, I feel like my eyes are watering. Thanks a lot. Oh my goodness. That is so sweet. Oh my, and your daughter just sounds so wise for being 7 years old and understanding, like you were saying, the magnitude of that.
She's amazing. Yeah, the depth of understanding, she's just incredible.
I also think that says a lot about your parenting, too. Just
Thank you.
Many, many props to you.
Thank you.
Now, Evelyn, what's one thing that's really exciting you about your writing right now?
I'm working on the sequel, and that's really exciting. This is a duology, so that means there's two books, and so then the series will be done. And that's both exciting and sad to kind of wrap it up. But, you know, then the exciting thing means that there's something else on the horizon, right? I get to dive into some other new world that I create and new characters. That's exciting. And really just, this is my first book. The Crowns Game is my first book. It's going to be out in the world. I am just trying to live every moment, every new thing and enjoy it. You know,
yeah, I think it's going to get really freaking crazy for you. Like once it hits stores everywhere and those 21,000 people on Goodreads are like signed up, girl, you better watch it. You're not going to have any time. Do you have any vacations planned for after you finish the second book?
I actually have a vacation planned for right after release. So my book is out on a Tuesday. Books always release on Tuesdays for some reason. May 17th is when it's out. Yay. And then I'm going to kind of stick around and I'll still be online, but I'm going to run away somewhere. Like my boyfriend and I, we haven't decided where. We're just going to run away and I'll sort of be online, right? Because I want to, you know, still be involved with my book being out there, but also just kind of like a celebration and a relax and being like, I'm going to take a break from all this craziness and just really enjoy this.
What are small, manageable steps that you would advise to writers to take every week towards accomplishing their writing goals?
Set yourself a goal for writing. Give yourself a word count that you want to reach, whether it's every day or every week. You know, for me, it's like I set my 1,000 words a day, but that's also because I'm a full-time writer, right? If you have a day job, be kind to yourself. That's my other number one thing. Be kind to yourself. Everyone works differently. Everyone's life circumstances are different. You know, if you're working a day job and you're also raising kids, tell yourself you're just going to write 200 words a day. Give yourself a little bit of time every evening that's your time and just do that. And it all adds up. I think that's the big thing. It all adds up. Don't compare yourself to finished books. It takes a long time to get to a finished book, you know, years of revising. And just be kind to yourself and believe in yourself and know that little bits of effort will add up in the end.
What if there are writers out there who can't write 200 words even a day? What if they just feel like there's nothing in them for that day or the next day? What is your advice about that?
That's the other thing too. I think a lot of people say you have to write every day. I do not write every day. I absolutely go through periods where I am just done. Like there's nothing in my brain. There's no energy. There's no creativity. And this goes back to being kind to yourself. Just understand yourself. As long as you've got a work ethic and you know you are going to come back to it, absolutely take the time off. Like I sometimes take 2-3 weeks, an entire month where I do nothing. I'm actually looking forward to the summer where once my sequels and copy edits and I'm, you know, setting aside my other project, I'm going to just take a couple months off and do nothing. And that's really important too. Like living your life, giving yourself time to dream without pressure or like just giving yourself a chance to recharge, absolutely crucial to being a good writer.
Ooh, I love that. Thank you for giving us the permission to do that. I think that's fantastic. And now, last but not least, what are recommended books that you can share so we can check it out?
I have a few. So first, I mentioned Nathan Bransford's website. He was the former literary agent and also a published author. He has a wealth of information on his website about how to get an agent, how to get an editor, just basics about writing. And he also now has a book out, which the name escapes me, but it's a writing book. It's a how-to writing book, and it's a lot of his wisdom from his years as a literary agent and as an author in one place. So I would definitely check out that. So that's Nathan Bransford. The second book I'd recommend is Hooked by Les Edgerton. That book is about beginnings. It's all about first lines, first pages, and first chapters, which are remarkably important. Literary agents and editors only have so much time in a day, and you need to get them from the very beginning, and that's why this book is called Hooked. So it talks about those things, but it also kind of touches a little bit on overall structure of a novel, which I think is super helpful. And then the other book I would recommend is called Save the Cat. It is actually a screenwriting book, but it talks about plot structure, story arc, pacing, more traditional to like movie structure. But I think it's super important nowadays when people's attention spans are so short and they're used to things being delivered, you know, and grabbing them right away and the pacing being faster, that I think that this book is really important. So I would check those three out.
Amazing. Evelyn, you've been so awesome. Thank you again for being on the show.
Of course. Thank you so, so much for having me. It's been super fun. I'm so glad I got to talk about this. And thank you and good luck to everybody.
That wraps up our episode with Evelyn Skye. Evelyn, thank you again for being so generous and sharing your writing journey and the tips you've learned along the way. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to check out Evelyn's book, The Crown's Game, that's available on May 17. The New York Public Library is calling it Game of Thrones for the younger set. Say hi to Evelyn on Twitter at EvelynSkyeYA. For a list of all the books and resources she mentioned, including more information about Pitch Wars, be sure to head over to her show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Evelyn Skye. At the very top of the show, you heard me talk a little bit about Vermont College of Fine Arts. I'm so excited to share more about them. Like I mentioned earlier, I know there's a lot of you who are really interested in writing books for children or young adults, so you'll definitely want to pay special attention to what Vermont College of Fine Arts has to offer. VCFA has three different graduate level programs for writers, and I'll be going into detail about their program called Writing for Children and Young Adults. Students meet up twice a year on their gorgeous campus in the heart of historic Montpelier in Vermont for intensive 10-day residencies. It's a lot like 10-day retreats for writers, and you guys know how much I love retreats. Imagine attending VCFA's MFA program where you'll be immersed in an amazing writing community filled with intensive workshops, lectures, panel discussions, and readings that are always challenging and inspiring you. After the life-changing experiences at the residencies, you and the faculty will design your own course for the start of the semester by really zoning in on your specific writing goals. Throughout the semester, you'll continue working with faculty mentors through telephone conferences, emails, and letters. So basically, you're receiving one-on-one mentorship throughout your semester as you take control in shaping the kind of education you want out of your time with VCFA. Check out 88cupsoftea.com/VCFA for more info. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye!